Happy November. Is this our first November entry, I believe, for Team Blockchain's Digital Bytes newsletter? And I'm here with Johnny Fry. Everybody knows who I am, James Tiley. Only if you're in the CyberFM world. Nobody on the Team Blockchain side knows who I am. But I think Johnny and I have been doing a really good job of merging our fans together and to get to know us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. James, great to be back on the air with you. And amazing. You broadcast this to, your 140 different countries. And I know that, you've got lots of followers here in Europe and Africa and obviously, the good old USA. So, great to be back on the waves. And just for newer listeners, Digital Bytes, it's basically a two-part show. First part of the show is really James and I talking about some of the articles that we write about every week. And the articles are really trying to sort of demonstrate and point out how, where, and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used in different jurisdictions and different industries all over the world. And then coming up after the break, we try and get a guest speaker interview. And this week we've got a chap called Christopher Luck, who's a lawyer at the law firm CMS, who actually, they're not that big in the States, but they're the biggest realtor lawyer in Europe. So talking about digitization of assets, of funds, Chris has been in that sort of sector for many, many years. And he spoke to some of his colleagues in Switzerland and Singapore and Italy and France and just giving us an insight to the different jurisdictions and what's going on there. But if anyone wants to receive their own personal copy of Digital Bytes, it comes out every Wednesday. Just contact either James Tiley at cyber.fm or contact me, Johnny Fry, JONNY.FRY. I'm on LinkedIn. Send me an email and we'll get you on the mailing list. It's completely free. And it's about 3,000-4,000 words. And it's just trying to give you case studies and examples so you can see what's happening. There's no investment advice, no recommendations. It's just really trying to get people to be aware of some of the things going on, out in sort of, out on the technology side with some of these digital assets, which are crypto and non-crypto. It doesn't have to just be crypto. There's a lot of examples increasing where people are digitizing loyalty schemes, where I think, to be fair, James, you're well ahead of the game there with your cyber.fm token, weren't you?
Yeah, we're waiting for the big guy to come and improve upon ours so that we could fade away. And I'm just kidding. But we were one of the first, and we talk about that a little bit, but what Christopher talks about hits home in that case with the laws across, global regulation and how we lack it. He also agreed with me, I think you'll hear it later, with Africa's impact, We give a shout out to our Nigeria guys and the other African countries. They're embracing crypto, I think, at a further pace than maybe the U.S.
Yep.
That's a good segment.
Very good. So this week, one of the things that we were interested in is what's happened with MasterCard, because it looks like they're sort of making it easier to get involved in cryptos because they've got something like 2.8 billion cards and they've got over 20,000 different financial institutions and millions, obviously, shops and merchants all over the world. And what they're basically saying is, their quote is, "We want to offer all our partners the ability to more easily add crypto services to whatever they're doing." And so therefore, it's going to be a lot easier now if you've got a MasterCard, potentially for you to be able to, buy or sell cryptos and use your cryptos in sort of everyday transactions, potentially. So whether that's sort of topping up your, coffee cup in the morning or doing a bit of shopping online or maybe getting some gas or paying for your car to be recharged if you've got your car. I forgot, James, you got a new motor, haven't you?
Oh, you're right, I got it yesterday. It arrived.
Oh.
And I'm learning so much about electricity, kilowatts per hour, and I bought the wrong cord. So BMW, it's an i3, and what's really cool, you want to talk about technology for a quick moment, you download the BMW app and you create an account. The car has 4G in it, and it's free. But I guess it's for a use case. So when I downloaded the mobile app and I registered, I put the VIN, the identification number in the app. and it says, go to your car, go into the system, click menu, do all this, and find your confirmation number. So it transmitted a confirmation number to the car to prove that I'm the owner, almost a sense of blockchain-esque future capability there. It wow. validated that I'm the owner and linked my account. And now I sit in the living room, set the air conditioner. I can lock the horn, lock the car, hit the horn. I could wow. plan a trip and send it to the car. And this is all outside of the fact of the saving of petroleum. We call it gas here. The green energy is almost like a side perk to the fact that I could just do all this stuff with my car on my phone.
Wow, that's really cool, isn't it?
It's, yeah, for the Generation X in me, it's a little bit mind-blowing being on top of technology. But it's an awesome little car, and it is stupid fast. It would have made Pierre smile. It's just ridiculously quick, because it's all electric.
But you've got to make sure it's charged, because it doesn't go very fast on a flat battery.
Oh, I am learning. It's a whole new world.
Okay, well, getting back to this week, we also wrote a story about... we called it How Long Before We See Facebook, a Digital Currency.
And Meta.
For those sort of been looking at this sort of topic for a little while, they may remember it was back in June 2018 that Facebook sort of really arguably sort of put a rocket up the back of a number of central banks and governments, because they said, we're going to come out with this thing called Libra. We're going to sponsor this association. And you saw people like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Stripe, Mercado Pay, all of these big companies said, no, we're going to be part of this. And what happened is I think governments suddenly woke up and realized, well, look, there's 2.8 billion people that are logging onto Facebook every single month. There's questions as to their security and privacy and things like that. Do we really want one corporate to know what we're spending money on and what have you? But I think it was more the fact, and this is very much a personal opinion, Facebook with their 2.9 billion, that equates to over three times the population of all of the G7 economies combined. And whilst, you know, at the time Libra, they came out with their strapline, their mission was to enable a simple global currency and financial infrastructure that empowers billions of people. Because amazingly, there's still 1.7 billion people in the world that don't have a bank account. There's over a million people here just in the UK that don't have a bank account. But according to the World Bank statistics, of that 1.7 people that don't have a bank account, two thirds of them have a mobile phone. And you know, if you've got a digital currency, then potentially you can actually, you know, integrate and you can be part of the financial system. Where it's difficult with just using money. So what we're actually seeing is the Facebook are now coming back and they're now saying they've renamed their company, as you well may know, Meta. And there's people arguing, say, well, because they've renamed their currency, renamed the company, are they going to have another crack at coming out with some sort of Facebook-sponsored endorsed coin and start running it through their universe, because the new push that they're going for is this metaverse, and are they going to use their sort of digital currency in their metaverse with artificial intelligence and AV and virtual reality and the avatars? So really interesting. I think they're renaming the company. We may well see another push, and they may be pushing more on an open door this time.
I think my opinion is going to be, if you see Facebook, I saw a TV commercial today just referring to it as Meta. I don't know personally, are we completely getting rid of the name Facebook? Is it going to be Meta going forward? Like, hey man, find me on Meta? My opinion is going to be, if you see them push and invest in internally that marketplace, that Facebook marketplace that we are all using now, I don't care who you are, you're searching that for a toaster oven. If they start pushing that, there's no argument that can be against Facebook creating their own currency. That'll be it right there.
So we think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to see that coming out, probably sooner rather than later. And all those companies, you know, interesting, Visa and MasterCard and PayPal, Stripe, a number of them have pulled away from the original Libra Foundation, which then became Diem. And here, as we just talked earlier on, MasterCard are now enabling crypto purchases on their card. Visa, in the first 6 months of 2021, did over $1 billion worth of transactions. And Stripe announced yesterday, it's now the 5th of November, so on the 4th of November, Stripe came out with their earnings, and they'd actually generated $1.8 billion worth of revenue just on trading Bitcoin, the results were saying. So we're seeing these companies very much involved in helping to build the infrastructure, which we so desperately need in order for people to accept and spend digital assets. And at the moment, it's around, you know, cryptocurrencies. So it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the like. But I think what that enables will enable the adoption of stable coins and then other potential assets which get digitized, whether it be real estate or commodities or just straightforward equities. So that infrastructure needs to be in place to go forward, really.
So when we say things like Bitcoin and Ethereum and the like, is and the like consist of Shiba Inu or Algorand? What do you think?
Yeah, Algorand is obviously a much more sensible, established business. I have no doubt. But Shiba, it was set up to sort of mimic or to do something better than Dogecoin, I don't know. We've just done it. We'll
crazy, right? Shiba
because actually we've just done an article for next week's Digibyte, so I'm sure we'll talk about that. But you know that little token has gone up 85 million%
right
in the last year.
1 million.
So we'll come back to that holders. Next. Let's come back to that one next week. So I've got some stats which I've pulled out, which we'll do because I'm obviously mindful we're sort of coming up to the top of the hour, and we've got our guest interview sort of later on. You see we've done some stuff in for the Shiba token this month this week, and you'll see although it's turned $3,400 into $1.5 billion, so that's $3,400 into $1.5 billion in the last year. There have been times, May was an example, it fell by 81%. Earlier in October, it fell by nearly 40%. And in the last couple of, last week, it had fallen by 29%. So it's not without its ups and downs. It's quite a volatile cryptocurrency, which, you know, if you're putting away money on a regular basis, pound cost averaging, you know, maybe that's okay. But, is it the sort of thing you want to put your life savings into? With the benefit of hindsight, you probably wish you had. But right now, is it going to go up another sort of, you know, a few million percent? I'm not sure. But it's worth $30 odd billion. I mean, it's the ninth biggest cryptocurrency out there. Just incredible what it's done, James.
And they're all anonymous. Isn't that amazing?
Totally anonymous. All you can see is a funny Shiba-looking dog looking at you on a round circle saying, you know, I don't know. But what was interesting, I thought, though, in that article was the percentage of citizens that have bought a cryptocurrency. And we've definitely got a bit of an African theme going here this week because, according to Statista, they claim that Nigeria, 31.9% of their citizens have bought already a cryptocurrency.
Which and they have Cyber FM.
Yeah, and they're big supporters of you guys, certainly. But the other countries, going down from that in terms of their adoption of cryptocurrency, you've got places like Vietnam at 21%, the Philippines at nearly 20%, South Africa 17.8%, Thailand 17.6%, Peru 16%, Turkey 16%, and I go on and on. All of these are relatively fast-growing, young populations, and they seem to be embracing sort of digital assets and cryptocurrencies much more so than perhaps certainly the G7 economies, the sort of slightly older population countries. And it seems to be the youth are really, I think, leading the way. And this is very much what's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be faster, cheaper, and be able to do more things. And it'll all be online, on your mobile, digital. And that makes it really, really super interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be the flippening of economies. Some country is going to come out of nowhere as like a leader.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, in the same way we saw in the past, places like Austria or Spain, you know, we saw the Ottoman Empire, you know, we saw the Roman Empire. You know, I don't think we're going to necessarily see an empire come out of crypto, but I think you're right. We will see certain countries which at the moment aren't known for their financial or military or manufacturing ability. But you could well see another country come completely, you know, left of field and suddenly become very dominant in this space. And I think that's what other people, other countries have got to look out for, because there's a lot of high paid jobs creating lots of tax opportunities for governments, and they won't want to miss that. So I think that's going to be a driver for greater clarity in terms of rules and regulations, and therefore adoption of these assets.
Oh, look at that. Oh, didn't hit the
James, you still got that wretched COVID.
I tell you, this what they call long COVID. They almost make it, they're romanticizing it now, where I'm one of the few.
But I just finishing off of that, James, you know, I think fantastic credit for you. You've now had long COVID. I know you had this flipping cough for several weeks it's gone on for. And you know, it's no fun at all. And, you know, hats off to you for keep going. So I know it's not been easy, especially doing these recordings when you have to keep stifling a cough or what have you. So, you know, thanks for keeping at the mic like you do.
Yeah, it's fun when I do the rock and roll radio shows. It's almost like it's expected. Toke up a little bit, have a cough, it's okay. It's Zeppelin coming up next.
Well, you think you've got some big stogie on the go and you're having a cough because you've been smoking too much, I suspect.
God forbid I enjoy the cough.
Okay. Well, look, James, I think that's, I know we've got a, coming up now, we've got a break, and we've got Christopher Luck from the law firm CMS. But as I said at the beginning of the show, if anyone wants a copy of Digital Bites, then just reach out to you, James Tiley, on cyber.fm, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Johnny, JONNY Fry, and we'll send you a copy of Digital Bites. But thanks for listening to us today. Hope you've enjoyed it, and always happy for ideas and suggestions. If you want to contact us and say, can you have a look at this? Can you look at that? We can't give advice in terms of individual tokens, but happy to look at some of the slightly bigger things that may be on your mind or your company or you may be looking at. And I'm happy to, you know, engage if you want to contact us.
The opinions expressed here are not necessarily that of our local governments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, James, well, we'll see you after the break. And yeah, thanks again for listening.
Yeah, we'll be right back in half a second.
This is real-time music playing, cryptocurrency paying, free money radio, cyber.fm, cyber.fm.
And we are back. James Tiley, of course I am, with Johnny Fry, who is the king of our Digital Bytes newsletter over at Team Blockchain. We are back with, as promised, Christopher Luck, who is with CMS, and he was the guest article in this week's newsletter. So, Johnny and Christopher, welcome back over to the show for the second half.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, James. And, welcome, Christopher, to the Digital Bite Show. And really pleased, you wrote an article in this week's show about tokenization of funds. We know where we're going, but how and at what speed? But before we get into that, it'd be great just to have a bit of background from yourself, because you've obviously been in the fund sector and been a practicing lawyer in the City of London for a number of years. So it'd just be great to get a bit of feel for our listeners of you know, a bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
No, that's great. And I will start with a very traditional rather than a sort of crypto beginning, which is hello, and it's nice to be speaking to you all. And yes, I have been working in the legal field in the City of London and more broadly in the UK and internationally across sort of funds and corporate and technology related clients. And obviously, one of the big topics is the digitalization and advancement of technology, which I'm sure we'll be plowing into over the course of our chat. It's a really exciting space. I have many colleagues in different jurisdictions, and we'll examine actually what some of them are doing and looking at.
Brilliant. Okay. And I think it's a really good place to start, Chris, because what I particularly liked about the article is that you've almost been like sort of the ringmaster. You've been the conductor. You've actually kindly reached out to some of your colleagues in different countries across Europe to get a flavour and a feel for some of the different things that are going on in relation to the digitization of funds. Would that be a sort of fair summary?
Yeah, absolutely right. And yeah, different speeds, and it's not just UK and Europe, but actually quite a lot going on in our Asia Pacific region office in Singapore.
Great. And you, there was a really interesting chart which you called Digital Native Investors, which you'd got from Capgemini, their wealth report for 2021. Do you mind just talking? I appreciate this is a radio, so it's difficult sometimes to see a picture. Well, it's impossible to see a picture, but what was the essence that they were sort of showing in their wealth report that you included?
I think that the essence of that, and I'm speaking as a late baby boomer, so I'm not a millennial or a Gen X or a Gen Z. So, but what it's showing is that there is this growing demographic of people, especially in the Asia Pacific region, who are digital natives and potentially digital native investors. So this was really across asset classes more generally. But one of the big things is obviously this whole topic is looking forward into tomorrow's investors as much as it is to today's. And there's a huge growing market, especially across Asia Pacific and elsewhere, needless to say.
Right. And the Asia Pacific number, they highlighted it was what, 6.9 million sort of slightly younger, digitally more engaged type investors, and therefore they're showing an attraction, if you like, for trading and being much more engaged in the sort of digital economy, whether that's on their mobile phone or tablets, and the desire to be able to buy and sell goods and services 24/7. Then presumably there's going to be a desire and a need to want to buy and sell funds or individual assets 24/7.
Yeah, so you've got a new breed of investor out there, which is partly by approach to technology, which goes with perhaps generational shift and perhaps regional as well. So, and what we're talking about here predominantly is the world of real assets. So I'm not really in my article talking about cryptocurrencies or non-fungible tokens. What we're really talking about is how traditional asset classes, stocks, shares and interest in funds, real world investments can actually become part of this more tokenized universe.
Okay, and I know one of your colleagues, Jerome, in Paris, one of your partners of CMS there, he was talking, looking at tokenization of different projects, and he was talking about some of the sort of regulations, and we're seeing the French have actually been very, very active in terms of what they've been doing, I know.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, what happens is when we get into the world of regulation or legal aspects of digitalization is that each country is a standalone jurisdiction. So many of the laws will just be specific to that country. There is no uniform, universal platform of laws or regulation for the world of digitalization. You have to look at local laws, local regulation, or in some cases, you might be looking at federal laws or, for example, EU directives. So he was talking about France, but the story repeats itself in other countries. Some countries are progressing at a faster pace than others, and that is perhaps because they're embracing the concept of the digital economy more quickly. Other countries might be more conservative. They may be more concerned about protecting investors and the resilience of their markets and prudential regulation.
Right. Okay. Now, I know, having personally spoken and introduced a couple of clients to your colleagues in Switzerland, some of the things they're doing out there I found really, really interesting. And they were talking about the cost of effectively doing a digital IPO could be substantially cheaper than doing a traditional sort of public offering. So if that continues to be the case, it's going to be quite difficult for companies to say, well, you know, we're going to go the normal traditional route when they can save a huge amount of time and create a digital asset. And here we're talking about potentially creating a digital version of a publicly traded company, because we've got exchanges like Sixth in Switzerland, for example, where it is a digital exchange that you could issue your digital shares on. So I know there's been some chat for a while about, you know, even companies the size of someone like Novartis potentially are looking at the ability to create a digital Novartis share, which could then be traded. So interesting, as you say, the different approaches that are being taken.
I don't think it's just about the savings of the cost. I mean, obviously, that could be a great advantage and benefit. And I think one of the things at the moment is proving the use of tokenization and digitalization for these historic and well-established businesses, the whole asset management world. But it is also about opening up new opportunities, such as investment in private companies, investment in venture capital, perhaps investment in solar energy and climate change projects. So really, this is a way of tapping into a new breed of investor in a new way, or perhaps combining it with the traditional ways and making the traditional ways more modern and dynamic.
Right. Okay. And a good example of that is Daniel Kerr from Tokeny. And I know they have just completed a fundraising for a Dutch company. It's been run out of Monaco, and they've raised 40 million US equivalent for an insect factory, because they can actually use waste food and then, put insects in there. And then the insects, obviously, the larvae and eggs, and that cycle gets repeated. And it can create a very high protein fish food or animal food, basically out of waste materials. So a really good example of an ESG compliant investment, which obviously is very topical at the moment, but being done in a digital format as opposed to perhaps the traditional way it's been done in the past.
Yeah, and I think one of the other big issues is actually familiarization with digital. There are many people, and probably amongst your listeners, who are very, very familiar, but there are probably millions who are still learning what this is all about. And I think as we start to see things like digital currencies, people will become more and more familiar with this and perhaps more comfortable with it and less skeptical or less concerned about some of the issues that might come with it.
Okay, because that was going to be one of the questions I had, is that I know that you deal with some of the biggest fund managers and pension asset managers, certainly in the UK personally, but also your colleagues are dealing with, very large asset managers in Asia. I know your Singapore office, your colleague Matt Nortcliffe, has got a lot of experience and knowledge there. But what would you say are the key reasons that, if you like, the big fund managers and the big banks, why aren't they moving faster, in your opinion, to really integrate some of this technology now?
I think that the reasons are manifold. I can't really pick on one alone. I think obviously people see the world of crypto assets and currencies, which are a specialist topic in their own right, and they perhaps trailblazed for perhaps moving across into this more traditional world. And I guess there aren't many proofs of use out there. That I think people are talking a lot about the benefits, and so the interest is definitely growing, but you can't see a lot of mainstream tokenized, digitalized projects yet because the law, the infrastructure is still evolving. And so there needs to be a level of adoption for it to really take off. So in some respects, the benefits are perceived yet rather than actual. So I think we need to still get through the next phase, but hopefully take up is exponential once these things are all worked through. And I think also people see the technology. Is it really an add-on to what they've already got, or is it transformative? And also the technology, I think, is also still evolving. And people like Daniel, who you just mentioned, having common standards for that technology and the infrastructure around it, such as custody and virtual asset services, all that needs to drop into place. And shouldn't overlook actually people skills. If people are trained in an analog world, they need to adapt to a digital world. So there's a whole lot of things going in there. And other things are perhaps a little bit more technical, but things such as the law and regulation is not clear in many countries because the laws, again, are written for an analog historic society. And in some countries, that is changing. I'm sure we'll touch upon that in a minute or two. But in many cases, you just can't issue a digitalized share. In the UK, you tend to issue it to a nominee and then have to issue a representation of the right. Other countries have moved faster, such as Germany, and have changed their laws to enable what I've just been talking about.
So I know Germany and Switzerland, certainly from a European context, seem to be ahead. What are the other countries that your colleagues are talking about where they're saying the regulators and the legislators have embraced this? What are the countries showing a green light, and perhaps a couple of examples of countries that are perhaps a little bit more reticent, and perhaps at the moment is either on amber or red in terms of progress from your experience?
Yeah, and my comments will not be definitive, but from my experience, some of the countries more at the forefront We've mentioned Switzerland. France is progressive. Luxembourg, because Luxembourg is a huge fund destination.
Huge funder, isn't it? Huge in Europe.
Yeah. So there are, you think of Luxembourg as a small country within Europe, within Western Europe, but it actually channels billions, if not trillions, of dollars or pounds into different investments, whether it's venture capital, private equity, real estate, you just name it, really, it keeps on going. So Luxembourg has a huge vested interest in moving forward this digital economy. And obviously Luxembourg is almost next door, not quite, to Brussels. So therefore, it's very much part of the European Union, which was also very keen to capture this whole digital economy concept. Other countries, I'm sure, the Netherlands, progressive, there's quite a good infrastructure and ecosystem for this digital world in the Netherlands, and there's projects been going on there. And we've also seen, we mentioned Singapore, that's another example where the monetary authority has been working very closely with this whole concept, perhaps to encourage things like the build out of venture capital opportunities to grow economies.
Right. And I suppose Singapore is another, not dissimilar to Luxembourg in the sense it's a small geographic country, but it really does punch above its weight when it comes to sort of funds and investments. And it's seen, you know, as a sort of a safe harbour, certainly from an Asia Pacific basis for a number of years.
And yeah, and needless to say, I wouldn't perhaps see London as an offshore centre, but certainly it's a financial centre alongside Singapore and New York. So obviously London has a huge interest in this whole topic and fintech generally.
Yeah. And what apart from China, which what are the other countries which are perhaps at this stage sort of on amber or red, would you say, when it comes to sort of tokenization and digitalization, whether it be funds or of assets?
I think Italy is looking quite closely at this, building it up. That's an example of a country. Interestingly, the African nations seem to be embracing digital technology because I think it liberalizes, democratizes, opens up opportunities across various nations in Africa. I would say that the United Kingdom is still feeling its way. There are consultations around stablecoin and the like, but we don't really yet have a call a full green light and clarity on all issues for this perhaps to go to its next stage.
Right. But generally supportive, as you say in your article there, they pioneered the idea of a regulatory sandbox where regulated companies could try and experiment, not necessarily in the crypto or digital asset world, but generally. So the idea of embracing change, that seems to be something they're keen to do. But at the moment, it's still a bit sluggish in terms of coming up with definitive regulations and guidance on this topic.
Yeah, and I think the UK, many people say that actually what you need to look at in some respects is what is it that you're actually doing? Because what you're actually doing is probably already regulated. And if you look through the technology, you regulate it by reference to the actual activity. So if you're advising, if you're managing, if you're running a platform that would otherwise be regulated if it was a physical, traditional one, you can't use the technology really to step around the regulation of the particular country. It's not one of those, it's not a sort of a trick.
I get that. Brilliant. Okay, well James, I appreciate we're coming to end of the show. Is there anything in particular that catches the fancy, or that you'd that you've got any thoughts on what we've been discussing there?
Yeah, I was intrigued over the Christopher was talking about basically everything's antiquated, you know, the laws are not 21st century in terms of, you know, cryptocurrency trading. And I thought, selfish plug here of Cyber FM, right? We've tokenized our reward system. We reward the listeners for the time that they dedicate to us. Listening to this show right now, they're earning their cryptocurrency as a reward. And in the United States, we were so careful about the fact that we are not a security token. Our revenue has absolutely nothing to do with the token. We used our own funding, you know, our own technology, our own sweat. And Christopher is talking about the majority, the mainstream, Cryptos go onto exchanges, right, in order to be traded, and investors invest, and traders trade, they short, they long, they do what they do. We had no choice but to go on these exchanges in order to be liquid for the listeners, right? We want them to cash out. We advertise, you know, the big guys are paying their phone bill, their cellular bill every month for free because of what they earn with us. But we're not a trader's token, and we have no choice but to be one in the current standard, right? We're worried about the Howey test in the United States. We're worried about, you know, securities laws in all countries. Fun fact about Africa, you're talking about, we are just massive in Nigeria. Like, shout out to the Nigeria listeners right now. They love, I mean, our numbers are crazy. So you're right about that. But what do you think about, what's your opinion on companies like ourselves that wanted to get into crypto for the greater good, create a currency as a reward?
But so like a loyalty
we have
scheme,
no choice.
James.
I'm sorry?
Yours is like a loyalty scheme, James, isn't it? You've run it as a loyalty scheme to encourage listeners to listen to you more, and that's how one of the ways you managed to be so successful. And you got over 4.5 million listeners, and yeah,
right.
A good chunk of those are earning as they listen, so to speak. But yeah, you
and
see,
we've been doing this for 4 years,
yeah.
So we're doing, yeah. We're happy with our success, but we are always, I'm not going to lie, we are always looking over our shoulders because of what Christopher talked about with these antiquated laws that. Mm. You're assuming we're out seeking investors, or we're worried about what our price. We worry about the price of the coin for the listener's sake, you know? So I was just interested in what you guys thought about how is that going to change in terms of companies who might be afraid to get into this world, you know? Because we are 4 years later still always looking over our shoulder to protect
investors. Right, I think reputational risk at the big end will be a big thing for the big institutions. You know, they will not want to fall the wrong side of regulation because they issue something or do something and get their knuckles wrapped or fined, because you know, the reputational point is going to be paramount, I would think, in most cases. And at the other end, for people, and there are fantastic people out there innovating and doing new things, they don't probably have the time or resources or budgets in many cases to go through all of this. And even if they did, there probably isn't clarity. And as I say, it's all very localized. And I wouldn't dream of advising on US securities law, which I suspect is one of those examples where the local laws or federal laws will be quite difficult. I think in the UK, Europe, other countries, it is probably further ahead. It is still evolving. So I'm not calling out any particular country. Which is why I say there are no universal standards or necessarily universal clarity.
We have actually this week, James, seen, you know, the first bank in the world to actually say, look, if you want to buy crypto, no problem at all. If you've got our banking app, you can now go on there and you can swap cash into, you know, some of these cryptocurrencies. And therefore, if you want to, potentially then in time, as we start seeing central bank digital currencies or stable coins or digital equities, digital debt, you'll be able to buy those as well, presumably. And that company, that bank, is Commonwealth Bank of Australia. 6.5 million customers. And it's the first bank in the world to say, we're now going to let you buy, you know, these crypto assets. We're not saying they're good or bad, but we've got so much demand from our clients that want to do it. We're going to make sure it's done, you know, and according to standards and, you know, that hopefully do as much as possible to stop any, you know, hacks and cybercrime and thefts and all the things which people are worried about. So, I thought that was a really positive mood, James, that we've seen that from a big bank in Australia.
I'd be more than happy for all the international banks to allow. You know, we're not even worried about direct fiat on-ramps and off-ramps, right? Our users are trading into Ethereum or Tether just to, like I said, pay their phone bill. So you're right, with the antiquated rules and regulations, at least I'm calling out the U.S. because I'm here. There would be a lot more companies innovating a lot more if they weren't willing to. they have to invest so much in time and resource to look over their shoulders. So I hope that change let's lead by France and Germany and Australia and Nigeria, right? Everybody, it's open arms. They're welcoming it. And it's been troublesome for us. But hopefully you're the forward-looking, accurate, you know what you're talking about. So let it come here, and we'll all grow.
I think another interesting dynamic to it all is not just the specific product or token that's being created, but I think organizations which are seen to be technologically progressive and advanced, actually there's shareholder value in it potentially as well. Because if we've seen retail change massively, to pick on a different sector, but if you're a retailer, but you've got virtual proposition as well as a physical one, and then they can do e-tailing, then obviously that adds hugely to your shareholder value potentially and valuation.
Yeah, really true. James, I'm very mindful. We've probably come to the end of the show. So, Christopher, thank you very much for coming on and just giving us sort of an overview like that. That's really helpful. And we'll try and drag you back on the show next year to give us an update, because I think, as you said, this whole landscape is changing and evolving so quickly on a global basis. And, I know some of the events that you've run, it's been interesting. Some of your clients have certainly said to me, look, I don't want to be first, Johnny, but I want to be a very, very close second. So we're currently running pilots, looking at projects, trying to understand how do we tokenize assets, debt, equity, funds, whatever it may well be, because they can see some of the benefits that this gives. But thank you, Christopher, for coming on. And James, I'll leave it to you to sort of wrap up this week's show.
Yeah, well, I guess we learned a little bit about CyberFM involving Christopher Luck, the go-to over at CMS. Johnny, I really don't know what to say other than you just know how to find the right people. That, you know, it hit me locally. So that was a great interview. I wonder what you're going to do for us next week.
I don't know. We'll have to dig hard. It's been Christopher is a font of knowledge and what I love, I can be, it's not being rude, but Christopher is same sort of age as me, sort of in his late 50s. And I think it's great that some grey-haired old men who have been from the traditional world, because as you know, I used to run a fund management business for years, we're not digitally native, but we've seen the opportunity and seen, potentially what's coming down the track. And that's, I find that really exciting, because talking to slightly younger people, they want this digital environment. They don't want to go back to having to make an appointment with your stockbroker or your bank manager. And, you can only go and use your banking services between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock or something crazy. And that's what a lot of this is about. It's about the technology enabling giving choice. So if anyone would like a copy of Digital Bites, it comes out every Wednesday. Please just, you can contact James Tiley at cyber.fm or myself, Johnny Fry. That's JONNYFRY on LinkedIn or all sorts of places. And please feel free and happily we'll put you on the mailing list. That's all for this week. And thanks again, James, for getting the organized. Thanks, Christopher, for joining us.